Welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Varsha.
And I'm Devin, and I'm no longer drunk.
Yeah, me either.
I know.
It's a sad night.
We had such an amazing response to our drunkisode, as it were. And Varsha and I were talking about it, and I think we just really needed it. We just needed to be a little silly.
Yeah, I think one person said it really well on the Facebook group. They were like, it was cathartic to listen to. And I was like, it was cathartic to record. Thank you for listening.
Exactly. And it was a lot of fun. And, you know, sometimes you just need to blow off some steam with a friend. And I think that's what it really was. Also, if you haven't listened to it, Varsha does an impeccable Lindsey Graham impression. And I highly suggest it, if only to hear that.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to do, and I'm not gonna lie, because I'm not Brett Kavanaugh, but the next day I couldn't remember I did it, and then I was listening to the podcast and I was like, oh shit, I impersonated Lindsey Graham. This was bad.
Oh yeah.
But it was fun.
Wait, Varsha, who's Brett Kavanaugh you speak of? I only know someone called Justice Buttface.
Right. From now on, just so Hellions know, everyone who's listening is a Hellion, we are calling him Justice Buttface. He is Justice Buttface.
From here on out.
I mean, there have been a lot of like Buttfaces before him, but he's like the first with the honorarium.
You're right. So on today's show, we are going to be talking about much more serious topics. We are going to be talking about Jamal Khashoggi, the reporter, the Washington Post reporter who was killed by the Saudi Arabian government while in a consulate in Turkey. We are also going to talk about the caravans that Donald Trump and Fox News are currently freaking out about. And we are also going to get into this ridiculous erasure of trans identity and how the administration is managing to really use the trans community as a quote unquote boogeyman in the run up to this midterm election. So a lot to get to, a lot of very not fun stuff to talk about.
It's not fun, but you know, the first thing to remember when you're listening to this is it's like less than a couple weeks till the midterm. So this episode should get you angry enough to vote.
Okay, Varsha, can you take us through what happened with Jamal Khashoggi? I just want to put a little warning at the beginning of the section because it's a very gruesome story and actually quite terrifying. So many of you probably know the details, but if not, Varsha, can you tell us what happened?
Yeah, so Jamal Khashoggi is a Saudi journalist. He has close ties to the previous Saudi government, basically the previous the current king. He has close ties to them. He's been a little bit of a critic to the current crown prince, MBS, or Mohammed bin Salman. And recently he has been working as a Washington Post columnist. He has permanent residence in the United States. And he I think he divorced his wife a while ago and he was set to remarry. And he went to the Turkish consulate or the Saudi consulate in Turkey to get some papers because they had asked him to pick up some papers. And he went to get these papers, basically his marriage license, so he could get married. And when he went in, he never came out, right? And so it's been a couple of weeks since the story like broke that he was missing. And so for the first few days, we thought he was missing. And then Turkey, Erdogan, basically the leader of Turkey, I think this is not conspiracy tinfoil hat of me, but I think Turkey was basically like leaking to the press very slowly that first they had audio that Jamal Khashoggi was murdered in the Saudi consulate. And second, they had surveillance footage. And CNN ended up obtaining surveillance footage of certain people that are linked to the Saudi government, to Mohammed bin Salman and Saudi intelligence coming out, right? And then eventually more and more information came out that around like 18 or 19 people had come from Saudi Arabia to quote unquote see the city of Istanbul and then left the same day after Jamal Khashoggi was allegedly murdered, right? And then so a couple days passed by, and as we know, Donald Trump doesn't like to mess with arms deals that he thinks are going to make him a lot of money. He also doesn't give a fuck about human rights. So basically he was like, I don't think Mohammed bin Salman did it. I don't think Saudi Arabia is a bad country. Like, what are you talking about? They buy so much arms from us, right? Which is bullshit.
And because, he even kind of set up their defense for them.
Oh,
you know, he said, oh, it could have been rogue killers. It could, you know, very, very much on this vein. It's very different. But when he was saying, oh, it's not Russia who hacked the election. It could be some 500-pound man in a basement, which is disgusting on it in its own right. But he was basically using this, a third party could have done it with no involvement from the Saudi government. So
And
Trump just offered up this theory before the Saudis did.
Yeah, basically. And, so the Saudis finally, a couple days ago, I think last Friday, they released a statement saying, oh, Jamal Khashoggi was killed. Because initially they were saying he's missing and we're going to help look for him. The Saudis were saying this. And then they released a statement Friday, like late Friday night their time, 1 a.m. Friday night their time, saying that, oh, Jamal Khashoggi got in a fist fight. And because of this fist fight with 18 people in the consulate, he died. And I was like, oh, did he also like fall down some stairs or something? Like, what the fuck? And and then like initially Trump like defended them and then he went back on it and then he defended them again. It's been really confusing. But finally today, Pompeo has revoked the visas of the men accused of killing Khashoggi. And it's not really like – not really anything to revoke the visas. That's nothing. You're not sanctioning Saudi Arabia, the country. You're saying, oh, it was just these 18 guys. So that's all we have to do. So it's sort of bullshit. But the reason that we're talking about this at all is because, you know, it's no surprise to people who maybe know a little bit about the Middle East, but we haven't had great track record when it comes to human rights and when it comes to relations with certain countries that commit human rights abuses, even in previous administrations, right? So previous administrations have given Saudi Arabia a pass on a lot of things. And when MBS basically took charge, because he took charge by like kidnapping a lot of other leaders in Saudi Arabia, part of the royal family, and keep holding them hostage in a fucking hotel, right? He's not like a reformer by any means, right? But the media... and by media, I mean literally the mainstream media, including like New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, a bunch of different places since the beginning of MBS's sort of like rule, I guess, has been giving him a lot of like good coverage, I would say. They'd be like, oh, he's like letting women drive finally and all these other reforms are going on, and he's cracking down on corruption. But really, he's like just as like fucked up.
This is also kind of authoritarianism 101 out of the authoritarianism playbook, right? So he's allowing these small performative reforms to take place. So he is saying, oh, I'm anti-corruption. Oh, I'm going to let women drive. Oh, I'm going to do all these things. I'm going to open up Saudi Arabia economically, right? And so he's saying all the right things. And even performing some of them, but then at the same time using that as cover to actually create a regime.
Yeah.
And like you said, his rule started by him kidnapping a whole bunch of the royal family and other leaders, including his own family. I mean, this is not someone that should be lauded in any way, shape, or form. And I think what also makes this especially disgusting is the fact that Jamal Khashoggi was a journalist. And especially as we see the authoritarian creep, not just in Saudi Arabia, though that's definitely part of it, but here as well, you know, truth, objective truth and facts and reporting and the Fourth Estate and a free press are so central to a free and fair democracy. And journalists are sort of
They're threatened, right? Journalists are threatened during this time, and it's really frustrating that they are, because literally a few days after it was announced that Jamal Khashoggi had died, right? Trump is at a rally, and I forget which – I think Montana. Yeah, Trump is at a rally in Montana, and then he basically applauds Greg Gianforte, who body slammed a fucking journalist last year and still got fucking elected. And he's like, oh, like, you know, I don't want to – like, I don't actually remember what he said. I don't really need to repeat it. He basically lauded Gianforte for attacking a fucking journalist. It's insane.
Right, and that's so fucking important. Like, again, it's you have to connect all of it together, right?
Yes.
Because this is Trump basically joining with Saudi ideology in attacking the press,
yeah,
and throwing his weight behind it and saying, oh, it's okay when they do it there because we do it here. I mean, it's obviously body slamming someone is not murdering someone. But mm-hmm. again, we're talking – this is now an issue of degrees,
yeah,
right? This is now an issue of, oh, well, we're not so bad. We're not killing journalists. We're just, you know, roughing them up a little bit.
Yeah, again, we're and just that's the delegitimizing creep. The press every fucking day.
Exactly.
And it's
the press is the enemy of the people. And,
yeah,
and you know, and Trump was so cavalier about this whole situation. He was like, oh, I think he called Jamal Khashoggi an it. He didn't even say he.
Also,
and he was like,
yeah,
oh, that he's not a citizen. He's not an American citizen. He was just a resident. As if
that matters. That's exactly right. So, like, he's giving this interview in front of the press. The cameras are all there, right? And he turns to John Kelly and he goes, oh, he wasn't even a citizen, right? And John Kelly goes, permanent resident. And then he says, yeah, he was just a permanent resident. This happened in Turkey. This was before all the more information had come out. This was, like, the first couple days into the story. And he said, but does that mean that we're going to stop this $100 million in arms sales? And this $100 million in arms sales, they're actually not, like, defined, right? A portion of that order has been made. The rest of it is, like, subject to, like, maybe approval. Like, it's not, like, concrete yet. Also, Donald Trump keeps increasing the number of jobs it's going to create, and it's actually not going to create a lot of jobs. It's maybe tens of thousands of jobs, mm-hmm, and he's, like, upping it up every fucking time he does a new interview. And I think at this point, he's, like, up to 1 million jobs. And I'm like, what? No, this is not going to create 1 million jobs. Are you bananas? Like, are you losing it? But
right,
the underlying problem, so there's multiple things going on here that I feel like people should pay attention to. The one main thread is the delegitimization of the press, the delegitimization of the media domestically and internationally, right? And so a lot of people can be cynics where they're like, oh, we were this bad on human rights abuses before, like during Obama and Bush and Clinton. I'm like, yes, we were. But there was a certain level we didn't cross. And I think we've crossed that level, right, when it comes to right, murdering a journalist. And so the Trump administration is just willing to look past the fact that Putin's regime, Erdogan of Turkey, Saudi Arabia, North Korea, China, a bunch of these authoritarian countries are delegitimizing the press, right? Duterte in Philippines, right? And they look to the United States as a trendsetter. Like, trendsetter is not the word. They look to the United States as a standard bearer, right? And people may think that doesn't,
yeah, as a fucking leader. Here's the fucking problem is that, and again, I'm going to put a pin because I'm going to come back to all of this. But again, at another rally yesterday, Trump called himself a nationalist. And
it was
again,
jarring. It was scary when he said
it
that.
Scary.
There was a chill on my spine. A lot of people were making jokes online. They're like, oh, like, didn't we already know this? I'm like, yeah, we knew it. But the guy thinks it's okay to say it now, right? Think about the fact that it was reported that he, for the longest time, Donald Trump, stayed away from that word because he thought it made him look kooky. He thought it made him look associated with Steve Bannon too much, right? But now he's like, fuck it. I'm just going to say it. So we're literally – I'm not even like – this is not tinfoil hat. This is not being like – this is not me exaggerating. We are probably a few months away from him saying, I'm a nationalist. I'm a national socialist, or I'm a white nationalist, or I'm a, quote, American nationalist. Like, he's going to add some type of adjective to this that's going to just make it more authoritarian, more more like, again, I'm following Godwin's law, like more like the fucking Nazis. And again, I hate Nazi comparisons, but that's literally what he's doing. He's unabashedly saying that I get to be a nationalist. I get to be, quote, patriotic and define what patriotism means. And so patriotism means selling arms to Saudi Arabia and not giving a fuck about the First Amendment because this guy wasn't even a citizen.
Right. Okay. And so that's kind of,
the second
again,
threat. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if you know this, but I've talked to Sarah Kendzior before. I feel like I bring her up every fucking time we get into this. But the fact of the matter, the fact of the matter is I am reminded every single time we talk about this, every single time Trump takes it that step further. He says he's a nationalist. He doesn't even bother coding the language anymore. And then he turns around and does a press conference and says, oh, I've never heard that nationalist refers to a white nationalist or anything like that. He literally fucking
said that today.
But I'm
insane.
I'm just reminded of Sarah Kendzior saying it's about blatancy.
Mm-hmm.
It's about getting to a point where our elected officials feel like it's okay to say this without consequence, because it is. And that is the terrifying creep of this. And so what I want to do is connect this back a little bit, because he says he's a nationalist and he says this means I'm America first, I'm a patriot. And what he's doing is shedding this mantle of international or world leader of any type. And so by saying that, he's not just saying, oh, we're only about America for America, I'm a nationalist and a racist, but he's saying, well, maybe we're not the standard anymore. Mm-hmm. Maybe our democracy, maybe our freedom of press, and maybe our First Amendment isn't so rock solid anymore, because it doesn't seem like it is. Yeah. And it doesn't seem like Trump is interested in keeping the global leadership aspect of being the president of the United fucking States of America.
Yeah.
And again, this is why it's all so terrifying, why it all like circles back into this, where it's about a man who is, again, like MBS, like the Crown Prince, mm-hmm. who is performing certain types of democracy saving acts, right?
Yeah.
Or paying lip service to it in a very superficial way. And Trump is doing the same thing insofar that he is the president, we are democracy, and he's using that as cover to actually create this understanding of the president of the United States as a nationalist, as a, again, I know we hate Nazi comparisons and I know it drives you a little nutty, Varsha, but like, it's really hard to ignore.
It really is.
That sort of creep.
Yeah, it really is. And it's not like a few months ago, or like at the beginning of 2017, I could have like laughed it off if he had said it then. Like I would have still been like, it was just a little chills down my spine, but I could have laughed it off. And at this point, I can't. Right? Because there are fucking babies in cages. There are people living in tent cities. There are little children living in tent cities. There are horrible things happening in almost every cabinet office. There are horrible things happening across this administration. And it's very clear that even if you think that Donald Trump is not too bright and he doesn't actually have a grand strategy, his strategy that is there, that does exist, is this idea that he doesn't think democracy should hold him accountable. Right. And because he doesn't think democracy should hold him accountable, he takes that into foreign policy. Right. And it makes him very transactional. So he thinks as long as I win, America wins. And I win, or I think America wins, by selling arms to Saudi Arabia, who the fuck cares what they're doing to people in their own country Right. And that's really not
to
good.
U.S. residents. I mean, again, this is not not completely divested.
Yeah.
This is not like, I mean, it wouldn't be better if it was someone who had no connection to mm-hmm. the United States. But that's not what this is. This is someone who wrote for the Washington Post.
Yeah, I just want to be clear. This isn't
safe.
Yeah, this type of delegitimization of international press, like crackdowns, isn't the first time. Right, a few months ago or a couple months ago, two journalists in Myanmar were sentenced to prison.
Right.
Because of journalism that they were conducting, like they were basically uncovering the genocide that's basically happening to the people in Myanmar, and these are AP reporters, right? These are AP reporters, these are Reuters reporters, and they were sentenced to jail, and it took days for the State Department to fucking respond, days. And this State Department it took them days to finally be like, oh, I guess we'll revoke the visas. And so I know what you're thinking, like, what do we actually do about this? How does the daily public have control over like foreign policy? And truth be told, like, we don't. But one thing you do have control over is the implementation of the Magnitsky Act, right? And so if we elect a Democratic Congress in a few weeks, then when Nancy Pelosi has the fucking gavel, she can investigate, she can have the Oversight Committee investigate what is actually happening, what actually happened to Jamal Khashoggi, what actually happened to what was actually the response by the Trump State Department and the White House, and whether or not there should be more sanctions placed on Saudi Arabia. And that can be done. That can be done if you have a Democratic Congress. And if you have a Democratic House, then you are going to be able to convince 60 senators to fucking pass it. And then you have to be able to like shame Donald Trump to pass it. Again, he may veto it, but it doesn't fucking matter because at the very least, you need the oversight to be able to prove to people who are watching this that Donald Trump dropped the fucking ball. He let somebody get away with this. And no one's going to forget in the international community. Everyone is watching. You know, dictators are would-be and wannabe dictators are watching, right? People who are already dictators are watching. Like Kim Jong-un is like, oh, yeah, Donald Trump like declares love to me on Twitter. I guess I can do whatever the fuck I want to my citizens. Putin is like, yeah, I can meddle in whatever elections I want. Donald Trump doesn't fucking care. Duterte is like, yeah, Donald Trump loves it when I kill my own citizens in to forward a quote-unquote drug war. Like, it's – he's sending all these types of signals. And I understand that like it's difficult to grasp how words matter in foreign policy because you think, oh, no, it's all about the transactions and the actual diplomacy and the deals. But the image matters. The image we portray matters. It has mattered significantly since the founding of our country, and it has mattered significantly more since 1945. And Donald Trump [S2] Right. [S1] Has managed to break down our image so much so in the past 2 years. Like people who were, you know, adults during the George W. Bush administration might remember our decline in international standing because of the Iraq war. And Obama built that up, not very fast, but he built it up and it took a long time. And it still isn't perfect, right? If you look at Obama's response on a lot of different foreign policy issues. But Donald Trump has managed to break down whatever Obama has built in less than 2 fucking years. And
right.
He's
well,
doing
and,
it
like,
while
yeah.
boosting up authoritarians. It's horrific.
Well, yeah, and I think I want to also speak quickly to this kind of transactional approach to foreign policy that you mentioned, Barsha, because it, again, when you look at all of these things piecemeal, right, you can kind of say, oh, well, okay, in a vacuum, maybe one of these things could happen during a presidency, mm-hmm. could you know, be something that is dealt with. But the fact of the matter is it's not. It's not in a vacuum. And creating a transactional foreign policy just makes it so that we cannot have any long-term goals or relationships with the international community. And what that means is that while that seems theoretical and that seems a little outside the scope of a domestic politics podcast, the fact of the matter is it's all going to circle back around and it's all going to come back to this. And we start to see it because Donald Trump called himself a nationalist. And I think that he didn't have the sort of gall to say that before. But now he's kind of, you know, thrown out balloons in the international community and within his base. And it's really come back to this idea that he realizes that Jamal Khashoggi is not – it's something that he wants. I know that sounds gross to say, but the breaking down of journalistic integrity and othering people, like othering Jamal Khashoggi right off the bat, he's not a citizen. He, you know, had views I didn't agree with, and that somehow making it okay just lends itself to this overall – shift in how we see not just journalism internationally, but journalism here.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a really, really big threat. Because I think one thing that people have noticed is, or one thing that I've noticed when I like watch a lot of, I read a lot of Twitter and I watch a lot of news, is that a lot of people get frustrated when journalists do this thing that they call like navel gazing, where they think they're focusing too much on themselves and their relationship to Donald Trump. But I don't think that's true. I think they should be worried. And they are. They are like basically pointing out that Donald Trump is not a normal president. We haven't said that in a while. Not normal. He's not a normal right. president when it comes to his relationship with the media. It's not normal at all because, one, we know he is obsessed with approval from the media. He has been obsessed since he was a fucking like real estate developer in New York. He's been obsessed his whole fucking life for attention. But at the same time, he knows that they have to cover him. So he knows he can lie and say whatever he wants. So Daniel Dale from Toronto, the Toronto Star, does live like fact checks of Donald Trump's like rallies and everything he says for every fucking day. And so reading his tweets are is like a national nightmare, but you have to do it because you realize this week, according to Daniel Dale, Donald Trump is just making up even bigger lies, especially about like fake news and journalism and the midterms and what he thinks he can accomplish, even though Congress isn't in fucking session. He's just lying about anything he can. And that all ties in. You, as you said, Devin, you have to connect the dots. It all ties into what we've just been talking about with Jamal Khashoggi. And I suggest everybody go read Jamal Khashoggi's last op-ed in the Washington Post. It's a harrowing read because he's sort of like predicting not his own death, but what Saudi Arabia could become and why we must be paying attention to what's happening there.
As you all know, Election Day is November 6th, and that is coming up fast. And it is so important that we flex our democratic muscles and vote. But in the days leading up to November 6th, there is something else you can do. You can volunteer.
It's so important to volunteer. It's like, this is one of the most important elections in your lifetime. This actually may be the most important election in your lifetime. And it is so important that we elect a progressive House this November. And the way to do that is not just to vote. You can't just vote. You have to be a volunteer. You have to get out there and canvass. It's actually not that hard. I've done it multiple times. There, people are really nice usually. You can also phone bank. You can also text bank. People, again, are usually very nice. It's not all like, you know, zombies and vampires. Again, I know it's October, but it's not all that. They're really nice. Their Halloween decorations could be cool. So go canvass. Go volunteer. Be a part of this democracy.
Yeah, and electing progressives and flipping the House is so important. We need it to perform these important oversight functions that we were talking about in this episode. So go to swingleft.org/hellbent, and you'll be connected with volunteers in your area so you can make the biggest impact before November 6th. That is swingleft.org/hellbent, and get volunteering before you get voting.
It's so important.
So I do want to move on. I want to talk about Trump has, in addition to all of this bullshit, been talking about reinstating a family separation policy. And I start with that and I lead with that because I feel like it's very important to point out that whatever political ramifications we thought the Trump administration experienced from the family separation policy, they did not experience them, or they ignored them. I'm not terribly sure which one it is yet, but obviously they have no problem kind of reintroducing this sort of idea. And a lot of this comes from this panic over a coming caravan of immigrants from Central America. Mm-hmm. So this has been 24/7 coverage on Fox.
And on apparently other mainstream media, as well as newspapers, and yes, it's fucked up, and I'm going to rant about it later. You go,
yes.
Devin.
Yes. Yes. Well, first I just want to set this up a little bit. So basically what is happening is there is a large caravan of people coming towards the southern border in the United States. And Trump is using that to just rile up his base, terrify his base, and say they're all coming for the United States. You know, Democrats want open borders. They want to just let them all in willy-nilly. And there are terrorists literally hiding in the ranks of people coming.
That is a lie.
And
guys. That is a lie.
That is a fucking lie. Fact check, lie. But what I do want to start, Varsha, I really want you to rant about the coverage of this, but I just want to read a tweet that really struck me. So this was a tweet by @LeedsGarcia, and she said, quote, "Dear reporters, hungry, desperate human beings, including children and infants, are not waves, tides, surges, armies, invasions. You are all suckers to this administration's goals. These humans aren't a natural disaster or enemy combatants. They are hungry, tired, and in need." And I would also like to point out that they travel in caravans because this is fucking dangerous.
It's hot.
And they do it dangerous to keep themselves safe. So I just want to put that out there. And so, Varsha, can you please go on about the kind of excuse me, the coverage here, not just from Fox News, although Fox News is covering this like 24/7 with drones, which is creepy and gross. Yeah.
So basically, this caravan, right? And I hate that word, but we're going to use it. This caravan, these people, they are in like the southern tip of Mexico right now. They're not even anywhere close to the Texas border, right? So this idea that they're going to, is like a horde of people, and I also hate that fucking word, that there's a bunch of people that are just going to charge at the border, it's bullshit. It's bullshit. It's not going to happen, right?
Bullshit.
So what happens? Like, let's just say they magically, they're able to fly, and they show up at our border tomorrow. Do you know what happens? What happens is that they get in a line at a port of entry, and either they're given asylum or they're not given asylum. Either they have visas or they don't have visas. We're not just going to let everybody in, because first of all, it's the Trump administration. They're definitely going to try to deport everybody. Second of all, like, it's the fuck.
That's not how any of this works. That's not how it fucking works.
Even under the Obama administration, not every single of these people would be given asylum. Not every single one of these people would be allowed into the country. So this idea that they're going to invade, again, also hate that word, is not possible, right? But
right.
That tweet you read is exactly on fucking point, because the media from Fox News, which is the worst example of this, they're basically like racist, like fucking – the racist fucking Dan Rathers over there just like yelling all day about this stuff. And it's horrific. But then you go into like CNN, you go into MSNBC, you go into the New York Times, which has had pictures, overhead pictures of these of this caravan 2 days in a row now. Think back to 2016, October 2016, that hopeful time where we thought Hillary Clinton might be president. Remember what was in the fucking news every fucking day? Emails. They're literally right. Buying into the Trump administration's idea that this is a serious problem. It isn't. Because one, they're really fucking far away. Two, we're still a fucking country of borders. Again, I'm not going to disagree with the fact that some Democrats out there, some progressives want more refugees. I do. But it's not going to be like a one and done process. It's not going to happen in one day. Right, there has to be actual policy change. And so this idea that these people who are made up of mainly like women and children and poor people who are fleeing violence are dangerous is nonsense. So I'm just going to repeat, there's like three layers of nonsense here that the media is doing a disservice on, right? The first layer is the idea that this is like some threat to the United States. It's not. It is not a threat to our border security. It's not a threat to our sovereignty. It is definitely not.
It's not even an existential threat.
Yeah, it's not even an existential threat. It's nothing. These people deserve the right to show up at a port of entry like everybody else. And if they have a visa, they can come in. If they can claim asylum, they can do that. And depending on the administration, you will like get asylum or not. Depending on your own status, you'll get asylum or not. Right? That is what laws are. The second reason this is bullshit is that the language they're using, because AP had a tweet a couple days ago calling the caravan a fucking army. A bunch of right-wing websites have been calling this an invasion. Even mainstream news sites have been calling this like a horde. They've been using these words that you said in your tweet that are so dehumanizing. And you're just giving Donald Trump what he wants. If you are a journalist and you are using dehumanizing language to describe a humanitarian crisis, if a bunch of people from Texas tomorrow had to leave their homes and walk north across the country and take refuge in North Dakota, you wouldn't be calling it a fucking crisis, or take refuge in Canada. You wouldn't be calling it a crisis. You wouldn't be calling them armies or hordes. And so that's the second level. The dehumanizing language is disgusting and unacceptable. And the third level of all of this is that you should be focusing on like what the Trump administration is doing about refugee policy, how they're making it even harder for you to apply for asylum, how they're making it even harder for immigrants to get benefits, just live their fucking lives, how they're putting babies in fucking cages. Instead, the media is going, oh man, are the Democrats too soft on immigration? Fuck you.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Well, that's exactly what this administration fucking wants, because here is the thing. I opened this section by saying this, but I just want to reiterate this. The Trump administration is using this panic that they fucking created, by the way, to kind of tee up a new implementation of family separation and abject fucking cruelty. Mm-hmm. And The thing is you have to remember that he's doing that because it works.
It does, because there was a story in the New York Times of a lady who was like, what's going to happen if immigrants invade my golf club? Literally. She literally
exactly.
said
that. And it worked because for all of the outrage and the just, the negative news coverage, I think Trump's base liked it. And that's what they wanted. And I'm not saying his base is even huge or it's even budged. I mean, it's been the same 35-40 fucking percent that, this whole fucking time. But they're reintroducing this and they're using this as a way to reintroduce it. Very close to the midterms, by the way. This is not a fucking mistake, right? They're doing this to whip up fear and to really get people afraid. Because what do people do when they're afraid? They
react.
They vote. I mean, they vote.
Yeah, they vote.
That's the whole Democratic strategy right now. And I'm not saying it's a bad one. I'm saying when people are afraid like this and they believe that their only recourse is to vote to keep Donald Trump in power, that's why they're doing it. Because they know that the family separation policy, while absolutely disgusting and decried by the masses, actually fed their base.
I just want to be clear. A White House official was quoted on background saying, it doesn't matter if it's not 100% accurate about the caravan. It's great for the midterms. Like, they know exactly what Donald Trump is doing, and they're happy with it. They're not even trying to walk it back, right? Like, Donald Trump said there might be, like, Middle Eastern terrorists or something, like, crossing the fucking border. And the State Department is taking its sweet
Fox
time.
News has drones 24/7. Don't you think they would have fucking found them, you asshole?
The State Department is taking its sweet-ass time trying to refute that because they know it's going to, like, freak people out. Also, the reason I'm ranting about the media is because they should know this by now. They fucking cover this guy 24/7 for the past three and a half years, right? Because since 2015, since June 2015, we've been covering this guy. We've been watching this person every fucking day. You should know his playbook. His playbook is very simple because he's not a bright guy. He's a trade protectionist and he's a racist. And then he's also, on top of that, a lot of sexist. So when he says outrageous shit, you shouldn't repeat that in your own reporting and use it as your own language. When he says outrageous spin, like the fact that Democrats want open borders, you shouldn't start going up to Democrats and be like, hey, do you want to abolish ICE? Do you want to let everybody in this caravan in? What if some people in this caravan are dangerous? That's bullshit. No Democrat has said that. Every single Democrat I've seen is basically saying, hey, let's stop calling these people anything less than human. Let them come to the border. If they deserve asylum, they should get asylum. That's it. It's not that fucking difficult.
Right.
And so, like, Ari Fleischer, the press secretary for the George W. Bush administration, also a liar, known liar, was like, oh, there's so many tough questions here. Like, how many immigrants do you let in? Or how many people do you let in? How many people do you let out? Who's going to pay for their food? Where are they going to live? Guess what, Ari? You worked for the fucking White House. Do you not remember how HHS works? You basically figure out how many you're going to let in based on an application by application basis. Then eventually DHS and AHHS figures out where to house them. And then you have charities, you have other things that pay for their food, for their housing. And eventually they get jobs or they get continued help because they have.
Also, not for nothing, but it's been proven. Studies have shown that communities with large immigrant populations are safer and thriving and better.
I mean, this isn't great science, Devin, but I'm an immigrant, lived in an immigrant household my whole life, never murdered anybody, never joined a gang, never sold drugs. Again, not judging you if you have, but like, I've never done it. Like, not judging you if you're a citizen and you have and you're going through the criminal justice system, but I'm an immigrant and I'm pretty awesome, pretty fucking great. So this idea that these people are like threats is crap. And like, it breaks my heart because there are actual good journalists covering this story by actually following these people on foot along with them or in cars along with them, not overhead and making them seem dangerous. And like, there was a tweet yesterday about a girl, a young girl who lost her stuffed toy and she's inconsolable. There's a bunch of people who are it's tough for them to walk in this weather or to move across the country in this weather and to move across the country with the limited resources they have. They are taking huge risks in doing this. Mexico has already said they will deport and apprehend a lot of these people. So this idea that this is an easy ride and they're just taking a ride, they're taking like a bus up to like the Texas border and we're just going to let them in is bullshit. Also, the fundamental question no one in the fucking media is asking, either citizens or politicians, Republican politicians or the Trump White House. They're like, wait a second. You've been in charge for 2 years. Why are you suddenly afraid of open borders and this caravan? I thought you had this under control. Right. So this idea that, oh, like, even though we've been in charge for 2 years, and even though, you know, quote unquote, the wall is being built, which it isn't, and, you know, we've increased DHS staff, we've increased CBP staff, we've increased ICE staff, this idea that we're still under threat, that's a fucking lie. It's what authoritarians do, right? And so I want to go back to when Donald Trump called MS-13, I think he called them animals, right? And then the media spent like a whole week being like, oh, is it really unfair to call gang members animals? And I was like, yeah, it fucking is, because they're still fucking humans. I'm sorry. Right. Like, they're horrible, horrible people. But if you dehumanize them, then you can dehumanize the larger group of immigrants who are actually good. And that's what he's doing.
Which part of that actually was that they the media couldn't figure out if he was talking about MS-13 or immigrants because of the way he phrased it.
Yeah.
Because
did that on purpose.
The fact of the matter was, he does it on purpose. And it's never been about nuance. It's never been about any of this. And to me, like, the way the media has covered this, and I know we spent the first section railing against, you know, talking shit on the media, but look, they deserve some shit too. Yeah. But the fact of the matter is that so close to the midterms, Trump knew, or Trump's team knew, to pluck this issue and to energize his base. Yeah. And it just sickens me that they knew to energize the base, that they had to go back, find people to dehumanize, and then attempt to bring back a cruel, draconian policy, because they know it works.
Also, like, we didn't even talk about how this is not just Donald Trump. This is happening across the country in various elections that are close. So you guys can go read about it. But like, Kemp versus Abrams in Georgia, Kemp is running like racist ass like radio ads about like voting. Basically, there was an ad where a white boy was able to vote with his ID and a black girl was turned away. Not like a not like old people, little children. A black girl was turned away. And then a white boy was let in. That was a George Kemp ad. Like, fucking hell. And then in Florida, fucking Ron DeSantis is, like, just, launching racist attacks after racist attacks on Andrew Gillum. And they do this because they know it works. Just today, a bunch of media stories, right-wing outlets and Kemp said, oh, Stacey Abrams burned the Georgia flag when she was, like, in college or something. Specifically,
they're not even bothering to code. Yeah. They're not bothering to code this. It doesn't actually fucking matter. Like, they're not even dog whistling. They're not even bullhorning anymore. They're just fucking saying it. Which, I mean, again, that's what's working.
Yep.
And that is what concerns me. And then there's another little part of my brain, though, that's going, it's the Sarah Kendzior voice in my head that is saying, which, by the way, you should all be listening to Gaslit Nation with Sarah Kendzior, because it is fucking
such
fantastic.
A great show.
But it's such a great show. There is just something in my head going, is it working? Because of the way, you know, they're targeting these racist ass citizens, which is part of it. Or is it working because they know that they've created systems in which it doesn't actually matter?
And so, like, I'm sorry if, like, I've yelled a lot during this episode or during this the past section, because it's just so frustrating. I've been watching this, and I've been simultaneously angry by the administration. I've been angry by and I've been angry by the media and different aspects of the media, right? Like Fox News, like Laura Ingraham being, like, racist as fuck on TV. That angers me a lot. Raises my blood pressure. And then, like, watching the New York Times run scary-ass cover stories about this also raises my blood pressure. It's all just shit. And I think what's really, really, like, pissing me off about it is that I've realized it's been almost 2 years, and on some things, we haven't learned anything, Right? Because think back to like the Muslim ban, the first thing he did, and the fear that was being put in society, the fear that was like being leaked out of the White House and put into certain outlets about how, oh, but there are certain risks to letting these people from Muslim majority countries into the country, or, you know, some of these people aren't actually good people, right? There was this. We were warned about this. Well, you know what, and it's just getting worse.
But you know what it is, yeah. Varsha? You know what it is? Is what we haven't learned from the Muslim ban to now is that the Trump administration has been using the term these people, yes, the whole time. And we haven't fucking noticed. And when you dehumanize people, it makes it really easy to do this. And for the past 2 years, that's been the singular goal of this administration, is the dehumanization of human beings. And by using the phrase these people enough and putting it out there enough, we've internalized it as a country. And so now when we see migrant children coming towards our borders for help, so many people just think, what are these people doing here? And that is the real failure of the Trump administration.
Okay, Devin, what are you grateful for this week?
All right, so I'm going to brag. I am very, very grateful for the fact that for Candidate, the show that Hellbent Media is doing in partnership with Emily's List, I got to interview Stacey Abrams. And for the second time in my life, which is a huge honor to have done it once, let alone twice. And we released the show earlier today. And we talked about the voter suppression efforts by Brian Kemp. But what we really talked about was how she has created something that goes so far beyond a campaign or an office. The thing about Stacey Abrams is that she is quite possibly the most wonderful human on the planet. And when you talk to her, you can't help but just smile, even when you're talking about voter suppression. But she said something that stuck with me. And again, everyone knows I've been very stressed, and, you know, I'm a sensitive bunny, and it's been rough. But she said something. She said, dreaming is a skill that I want everyone to have, and I want everyone to hone. And, you know, she was talking about how, you know, the way she talked about her campaign and her get out the vote efforts, it wasn't about a campaign. It's an ideology. She's creating a movement from her campaign. And win, lose, or draw, like, because I think she's going to win. And I asked her, I was like, what, you know, the polls have you really close. Like, what do you think about that? She's like, the polls are only polling likely voters. We have many unlikely voters coming out, because that's what we put our resources into. And she's created something that is so far beyond any political cycle or election that I'm just standing here in awe of her, just looking at her, wondering how we are even the same species. And I don't know, just speaking to her really put everything in perspective for me. And I will never, ever forget her saying, dreaming is a skill. So that's what I'm grateful for this week.
That's great. I listened to the interview. It was amazing. Everyone should go listen right now. I mean, Stacey Abrams is inspirational when she says hello to you. So like, it was great. And I think like, I'm also like on that vein, I'm grateful for a lot of different candidates. So I was watching a lot of debates this week, especially the Florida gubernatorial debate. And Andrew Gillum was just awe-inspiring, because he was just like making Ron DeSantis, like he was just making Ron DeSantis pee his pants on stage, basically. It was amazing. But also he was just being so clear about his values. And I think that's what I find so inspiring about 2018 and the slate of candidates we have across the country, from people running for school board all the way up to senator and governor, is that they have a set of values and they're making it very clear. And because it's very clear, it's very easy for voters, in my head at least, to pick and choose who they want to support individually. And that's really like that's so amazing to see, and that just gives me so much hope. But another like just personal thing I'm grateful for is I'm grateful for my sister. It's her birthday today. She's turning 18. And so it was like I'm going home to see her, I think, in a couple of weeks, which is great.
Oh my god, is she voting too?
That's another reason I'm grateful, is that she is registered to vote. She pre-registered, even though her birthday is on October 23rd and registration deadline was October 22nd. She pre-registered months ago. I remember she texted me like way back when she was in high school, I think March or something. She's like, hey, we had voter registration today. I was like, and I reply in all caps, did you register to vote? She's like, yeah, I pre-registered. And I was like, fuck yeah.
I love California. Pre-register.
Yeah. And so that's what I'm grateful for, is that it's like, it's really weird that my little sister is 18, but I really like her. We can't tell her I said that. She doesn't listen. It's okay. I really like her.
It's really funny. My sister's birthday was the 21st.
Oh, nice.
So
yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome.
But yeah, she's really great.
I also, y'all, Hellions, I'm so grateful for all of you and the responses to our
yes!
episode.
Oh my god.
Soothed my cold, mean feminist.
Yeah, because I remember, so I went home. I went to sleep that night after we recorded, being like, oh man, was that like really bad? Devin might not even release that.
Was that funny?
And then the next, like, it came out like yesterday, and I listened to it. I was like, man, we're fucking hilarious.
Fucking funny. It was not bad.
Great. I am so excited to replace what's his fucking face? I'm so excited to replace Louis C.K. at the Comedy Cellar, because clearly I have the talent.
I know. I'm
gonna stop.
Obviously,
they can stop giving sets to sexual assaulters and just give me the set, because
that would be perfect.
We have a routine, Devin.
We clearly have. We have an act. We have an act that we're gonna take on the road,
and it's screaming about how men are trash. Okay, Devin, who is the dickwad this week?
All right, so here's the thing. I'm just going to say this every week. We have an embarrassment of candidates for dickwad every week. But this week, we are focusing in on Health and Human Services. And also, like, corollary? Mm-hmm. Is that how you say it? Also, corollary. Betsy DeVos, because she's my arch nemesis, and I'm just gonna figure out any way to throw her in there. But Health and Human Services has put out a proposed policy in which transgendered is no longer a thing, and I don't know how else to put it. The whole policy is basically like two sentences, which is just like, it's not a thing, and then gives no more information or context than that.
It's really frightening, because we just spent like a long time talking about how they rolled this out right before the midterms, the caravan shit, right? They did this.
I was just gonna say, this is just about creating a fucking boogeyman. Yeah. This is just about finding any group of people to kind of hold up and say, look at how scary they are. Look at this. Look at this person. Look at these people.
Someone tweeted, they were like, is this really smart to do before the midterms? And I was like, yeah.
Yes. It's fucking brilliant.
People, like, have you not been paying attention? This is what they do. And so, like, they're basically what HHS is doing is they're saying, we're going to make it so the definition of gender is not as an individual's choice, but only determined by the sex at birth, right? So basically, this can affect policy in a shit ton of federal departments across the board.
This is why I threw Betsy DeVos in, is because on top of all of this, she's now trying to limit the scope of sexual assault and harassment claims on college campuses in tandem with this bullshit trans erasure nonsense.
Also, I may be reading too much into this, but there is sort of some anti-abortion bullshit thrown into this, where it says sex
obviously
means a person's status as male or female based on immutable biological traits identifiable by or before birth. Like, again.
No, you're absolutely right. No, you are absolutely, there is anti-abortion bullshit all mixed in.
Because I know, like, technically you can tell the gender of your baby before birth, but also, gender reveal.
No, the sex.
Sex of your baby before birth. But they said they clearly made it so sex is the only thing that matters. And also they made it seem as if because you can tell it before birth, like it's something that like everybody should like know, right? And it should be established before birth, meaning before birth is a really important time. So it's like baked in there. It's like really deep in there. You got to look. But I really think there's some anti-abortion bullshit in there. And then it goes on to basically saying the sex listed on a person's birth certificate as originally issued shall constitute definitive proof of a person's sex unless rebutted by reliable genetic evidence. And I'm like, so this is the time you care about science?
So if your genetics in there, like, what is this, fucking Gattaca? Like, get the fuck out of here. Like, you've been watching too many bad Jude Law movies. Actually, Gattaca was great, but you know what I mean.
Basically, they're like, oh, we really care about scientific evidence. According to the science we've read, which is bullshit, there's only two genders. And I'm like, that's some bullshit science you've read, right? Because I'm not even a fucking scientist. And I know that biologists have figured out that gender is a fucking spectrum. It's different from sex. I don't understand. And the fundamental issue I have with this, and the reason I think the Trump administration and specifically HHS are dickwads about this and being dickwads about this, is that they purport to love like independence and freedom and small government. Why the fuck do you give a shit what somebody identifies as? Like, I don't fucking understand. And obviously, as a historian, I know why they care, because they like regulating people and societies is how they wield power, but it's fucked up. I just want to add that, like, one thing you can do about this is, again, elect Democrats. There's a bill in the House that would basically add transgender to definitions against anti-discrimination policies to make sure that transgender people are protected, right? And it's called the Equality Act, and it has a lot of co-sponsors. But if you have a Democratic House, you can pass that motherfucker out of the House, and then you can shame Republicans who, for some reason, can't seem to like equality. I thought they like it when everybody else has the same chance. That's what they say. They're bullshit. I know they're liars, but still.
But this just goes back to these. It's another these people.
It is. And
Jamal Khashoggi was one of those people. The migrants coming up from Central America are those people. Muslims are those people. Transgender people are those people that we need to other. And without othering, this administration doesn't exist. And that's why they're doing it.
This Equality Act, if we're able to pass it, even through the House, even if it doesn't get to the Senate, even if it's vetoed by Trump, it's so important because it shows, again, our values, which is what I was grateful for. It shows that we value the LGBTQ community in this country. Elect Democrats so we can pass the Equality Act and shame Republicans into just proving to the world they don't give a fuck about LGBTQ issues. Okay, Devin, what are some action items people can do this week?
Okay, so the first one, I'm not going to tell you to register to vote because you probably already are. I'm not going to tell you to vote because you probably already have. I'm just assuming that because you Hellions are fucking amazing. But if you haven't, I think most registration deadlines have lapsed, although there are several states where they have same-day registration. But I'm assuming you beautiful, wonderful Hellions are already registered. But I'm just going to remind everyone to go vote. That's number one. Number two, and this is somewhat of a hashtag ad, but I do want to emphasize. So don't just vote, volunteer. There is still time to get involved. So if you go to swingleft.org/hellbent, you'll be connected with volunteers in your area so you can get to work right away. And, you know, we've had a couple of ads like for the past couple of weeks for swingleft.org/hellbent. And they really just want people to get involved. They just want you to, in addition to flexing your Democratic muscles by voting, they want you to volunteer as well. And that is going to be so critical in these last days leading up to the election. And I really can't stress that enough. And then finally, you know, policies like the one HHS is proposing are subject to a comment period. So it's not a bill. It doesn't go through the House or the Senate in the same way. But they are subject to a 60-day comment period. And I don't believe it's been released. This is not proposed as official policy yet. But if and when it is, it's going to be your job to go to the HHS website and go to that comment section and give them a piece of your fucking mind. And you just tell them that this is a ridiculous, bananas piece of garbage, not worth the paper it's printed on, and you wouldn't even use it to wipe your butthole. And it's going to be very important that you use those exact words. I'm kidding. Don't do that.
Totally can. You can totally be like, hey, Devin Handy sent me to this fucking website to tell you you're fucking pieces of shit.
Exactly. So that's going to be – those are very important things to keep your eye on. Varsha, I think that's it for us.
Yeah. Whew. Man, that was intense. My throat hurts a little bit.
Mine too.
I should get some bourbon. I'm like a I'm not gonna lie. Like, I was like, oh, I should make some tea. Like, no, I'm just gonna have some bourbon.
No, I'm gonna make some tea, but I'm gonna some fucking bourbon.
Oh my god, have you tried right. that? It's actually delicious.
Hot toddy.
People listening, I know it's amazing. It's very good.
All right, Hellions, that is it for us. Have an amazing week. Practice some compassion, some self-care, and raise some fucking hell. Hellbent Podcast is a production of Hellbent Media. It is produced by me, Devin Handy.
And Varsha Venkata Subramanian.
We get editing help from Andrew Walsh. And we, of course, take input from co-creator Sarah Lerner.
You can follow us on social media at Hellbent Pod on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook.
And you can join our Facebook group, DickwadsBegone, at facebook.com/groups/DickwadsBegone.
You can follow me on Twitter at @Varsha_Venkat.
And you can follow me at Devin Handy. Also, remember to subscribe and rate us on iTunes and rate us 5 stars because that's just the rules of feminism. Tune in every Monday and Thursday for an intersectional feminist look and the centering of women's voices and people of color. We look at current events, public policy, and upcoming elections to give you the most incisive look into stories that don't get covered elsewhere.